Okay, so we've got great information for you for the next hour, and we're happy to be here with you. And then we're gonna take a break for a week. You'll hear a rebroadcast episode next week, and then we'll be back for more Radio Naturopath in 2 weeks. So, and then we'll be on the summer schedule, because congratulations to all of those students who are going to be graduating, and everybody's doing finals this week. So campus is going to be kind of quiet for a while after this weekend, but it will be very, very busy this actual weekend.
As I was talking to a couple of people in fitness walking this morning, they said, we're going to get our park back.
Oh, dear.
Isn't that awful?
That you're, you know, the
universities. Yeah, because, you know, it's really like when summer comes, there's, you know, there's summer school and there's summer classes, and then there's events that go on here, you know, where people come in that are having, I don't know what they're doing. They're doing different, you know, there's...
Confratude,
yes, and other organizations like that that come to campus. So we do have some activity up here, but it's pretty quiet. And, you know, for those of us who are local and are dealing with the traffic all the time, and it's kind of nice.
It's a break. You realize, though, that
but we love you, students. We really do.
We have a town here because of this university.
I know.
I mean, that's part of the deal. This is why we have such an interesting cultural base in Greater Storrs Mansfield, because of the universities that are around here. Because we have the University of Connecticut and we have Eastern Connecticut State University, and it enlivens the area and brings a variety of interesting and diverse people and diverse culture to this area. It's what makes this area exciting.
Right. Right. Yeah. And it brings lots of students in the middle of the night walking across busy streets with dark clothing on. So, you know, we have, you know, both sides.
And also, you have local townies, otherwise known as curmudgeons.
Yeah,
like the one sitting across from me.
There you go. That's me. That's me. I'm the curmudgeon.
Otherwise known as cranky pants.
Oh, there we go. Mm-hmm. There we go. You called me cranky pants.
I did, on the radio. On the air.
On the air. Yeah. In front of everyone.
You are cranky
pants. How could you?
Speaking of cranky pants, this is what we wanted to dive into today. There was an article that came out in the New York Times about The Biggest Loser. And I've talked about this before, but it was brought to my attention by one of my colleagues, one of my favorite colleagues, Jade Tita, who does a lot of work around fitness and metabolic training and resistance training. And he's just a wonderful storehouse of a lot of information. So I'm on an email list of his, and this was brought to my attention by that. And I found the New York Times article. And the article is called After the Biggest Loser, Their Bodies Fought to Regain Weight. So it's about The Biggest Loser and that TV show. And what happens when you take people who are morbidly obese and you put them on a camp and you sequester them, essentially, and you have them live their life eating healthfully and getting regular exercise and exercising for 8 to 9 hours a day. And then they lose tremendous amounts of weight and they compete to do it. And they tell you about what happened. And there is a certain percentage of people who regain the weight and regain a lot of the weight. So they might lose they might lose over 100 pounds, and then they regain a significant portion of it back. So what's going on with that? Why does that happen? And there are some people who gain the weight back and more. And this is classically what you see. People who lose tremendous amounts of weight frequently gain it back and more. So what the heck is going on there?
Well, this is also a dieting dilemma. And whether you're the biggest loser or not.
That's right.
Just losing, you know, 10 pounds, it's a dieting dilemma.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
One of the things that happens is when you try to cut your calories, one of the first things that happens is if you try to cut calories from your baseline, the first thing that happens is your body goes, uh-uh, and it kind of thinks you're starving. So you have a couple of hormones that control your sense of satiety versus your sense of hunger. One of the hormones is leptin. And the other is ghrelin. So leptin is the hormone that you want to have a lot of around, because leptin tells you, all right, you're done eating. That's enough. And ghrelin is the one that says, eat more, eat more, eat more. So one of the things that's interesting, so you have leptin and ghrelin in men and women. So men start out with less leptin than women. And so we actually have more leptin naturally than men. However, when women attempt to lose weight, their leptin drops a lot more than men's.
Hmm.
So when a woman versus a man tries to lose weight, it tends to be harder for us because our leptin drops a lot more. That's probably because nature wants us to hold on to fat more than it wants men to do that. And that has to do with reproduction. You know, basically has to do with reproduction. If you don't have... Nature doesn't care if you think that you're svelte or look good in a bikini or look good on the runway. Nature does not give a hoot about that. Nature wants you to survive. So nature has all kinds of things in place to help you survive. For example, it has a situation where one of the pregnancy hormones, progesterone, which is a hormone you make tons of when you are pregnant, and you normally make it in the second half of your menstrual cycle if you're not pregnant. So listen to the name, progesterone. Pro, it's in favor of. Gestation, erone, means it's a steroid, testosterone, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Or testosterone, estrone, anyway, it's a steroid hormone. So that's progesterone. Progesterone has a very easy pathway to be converted into cortisol, which is your fight or flight hormone. So fight or flight is going to happen if you're in trouble, if you have to run away from something. Cortisol is a hormone that increases your heart rate, increases your blood pressure, it increases your breathing rate. It puts sugar into your blood so that you can run away from whatever you need to run away from. And so if you're endangered, if you're endangered immediately, you'll make cortisol to run away from that bear right now. If you're endangered chronically, by marauding invaders or threatening tribes, or by 1,000 little deadlines, or worrying about everything from the kids to the car to what's going on with mom, then you're going to make more cortisol, and it's going to be harder for you to maintain a pregnancy or even start a pregnancy because most of your progesterone is going to get converted to cortisol. So nature wants you to survive. You can reproduce, or you can run away from danger, but nature makes it hard for you to do both at the same time. It's really brilliant. The other thing nature wants you to do is eat. So we have a situation where we have a weight situation in this country, and you have 2/3 of the people in this country overweight, and roughly a third of those people, or more than a third of those people, are obese. That means they have a BMI, body mass index of greater than 29. So those are people who are obese, 30 and above. They have a body mass index that they're considered to be obese. So you have a situation where most of the people in this country are overweight. So that's not because because of genetics. In fact, that means that the common genetic is one that's geared towards weight gain. It has to do with lifestyle. So diet and exercise, the things that we're eating and the way that we're moving are causing us to be this big, and it's causing most of the people to be that way. So it's something about the way the culture is run, the reason this is happening. You could certainly point to certain ethnicities over others, but when it's 2/3 of the country, it's most of the people. Mm. And it spans all ethnicities, genders, classes. Although I must say, people, you do see there is a link to poverty and obesity as well. The poorer people are, the more likely they are to be obese. So there is a link there, because in the most obese states, you also have the highest poverty rates.
That also kind of points towards our food source, too.
You got it. That's exactly right. So the things that people are eating, how people are educated around nutrition, and the things that people are eating are causing them to be more likely to be obese. Also, it's a portion thing. People are eating a lot of food. And if you're eating a lot of food, if you're eating a lot of food and the food that you're eating promotes weight gain and increases insulin and increases inflammation, when you increase inflammation, you have more insulin around. When you have more insulin around, you have more growth. You have bigger people. You have more fat. So it's a cycle. It's an insulin growth cycle. When a large part of the diet is modern wheat, corn, soybeans, things like that, and that's what most people are eating, and people eat a lot of modern wheat and they eat a lot of corn.
Mm-hmm.
And modern wheat somewhat more than corn, but corn as well, are going to are going to make you tend toward obesity. When you have people who are eating cereal for breakfast, and not just, you know, a small serving size of cereal, big bowl of cereal, sandwiches for lunch, and not just a sandwich with two thin slices of bread. We're talking a big grinder, or call it what you like, depending where you are in the country.
Grinder, hoagie, submarine.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Or big old Kaiser roll.
Could be anything.
Yes. And then pasta for dinner, pasta or pizza. And how many times a week do people eat pizza for dinner?
I don't know. I haven't had a piece of pizza for months.
I know. And we're weird. You have to understand, yeah. Ron, that we are weird. You
I
and
guess
I are strange. We are unusual. We don't do what most people do.
I've been trying to tell you that.
You're weird.
You're weird.
You're so weird. Anyway, weirder. So that's one of the things that's unusual about us, and that's why we're trying to preach to people, but fully understanding that people have trouble because of education and because of their perceived access to foods that will help them to be leaner.
Well, this discussion was in not only in fitness class this morning, but it was also in the locker room this morning.
You always have discussions in the locker room.
Oh, yeah. The locker room's great.
I would love to go into the men's locker room at the Mansfield Community Center and just be a fly on the wall.
Yeah. Well, it's fun. It's fun in there. We have politics. We have food.
That
we
would
have
make
diet. We have exercise.
That would make Ted Cruz angry, though.
Yeah, I know.
Because I would be in the wrong locker room.
Right. You would. Oh, terrible. Anyway, we were talking about this whole, you know, this whole problem with, you know, Americans and diet and what they're eating. And I, you know, went through the white thing, and then I went through, you know,
white meaning white bread.
White meaning white bread,
the
white sugar,
diet.
White flour, white rice, you know, you don't want to do
pasta.
That. You want to stay away from all that, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, we went through that. And then this one gentleman who comes every morning, he said, you know, he said, the French are amazing. He said, you just go need to, we were talking to this one person who was having trouble and difficulty with his weight. And he's been battling it for his whole life. And he, this one gentleman said, you need to go to France. And he goes, why? And I said, oh, yeah, the French, yeah, they eat all the buttery things and all the pastries and all that. And I said, and they smoke like a chimney. And he said, yeah, all those things. But he said, when you sit down and you eat lunch in France, it takes 2 hours. He said, they eat slow. And he said that in reference to, I said something to this gentleman about eating slower. Because when you eat slower, when you become full, you're full. And his comment was, well, once I eat until I'm full, and then I eat more because I really like to eat. And that's a problem right there. That's something you have to avoid, is the, you know, eating for sport rather than for nutrition.
France is something that's been studied.
Yeah.
So I have a couple of things. One is that when Jade went to France, Jade and his wife Jill, they went to France, and they hung out in France to do some promotion and some talks. They noticed that culturally France is different than here. First of all, you notice how I'm dressed? I'm wearing sweats right now.
Yeah.
You don't see that. You walk around Paris, people don't dress like that. People aren't walking around Paris in activewear. You just don't see that on the streets. People wear, they dress fashionably.
They're very stylish, yeah.
Yes, they have a few nice pieces and they dress fashionably.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they walk everywhere.
Everywhere.
You know, they walk. They walk to get to the store. They walk to get to the cafe. And like you said, they sit down and they eat. One of the things that we don't have in the U.S. is we don't take vacations, and we work too much. We work way too much. Our quality of life doesn't compare to the way that a lot of Europeans have their lives. And in Europe, they take time to spend time with people. They don't work as hard, so because they don't need the money to have as much stuff. They also have a lot of socialized stuff. They have socialized medicine, and they have socialized childcare. So they are able to enjoy their lives more, and they're allowed. They have time to spend time with their loved ones, with their friends. Go out and meet somebody for coffee is something that can happen regularly. And you're likely to walk to get there. And then, as you said, you're going to sit there for 2 hours to eat it. Mm-hmm. The other thing about the French that has been studied, this gentleman that you said that likes to eat, he eats till he's full, and then he eats more because he enjoys eating. French don't do that.
No.
What they do is they, in America, we tend to eat based on external cues. So if it's time to eat lunch, we're going to eat. And if it's time to eat breakfast, we're going to eat. And if there's food that's sitting there, we're going to eat it. And we're more likely to pay attention to that than we are to whether we're actually hungry. The French are much better at listening to their bodies and saying, I'm hungry, I'm not hungry. And if they're not hungry, they don't eat. And that is a practice I try to do myself. If I'm not hungry, I don't eat. And I don't care what time it is. You know, I'm a little boxed in when it's a work day. And, you know, I have a lunch break and I have to eat lunch at that time. But if I'm really not hungry, I might not eat. Usually I work it so that I am. And I control my eating so that by the time lunch comes, I am, in fact, hungry to eat that lunch. And then I don't pile it on.
No.
You know, I eat a reasonable amount of food that's going to carry me till my next break. And then I snack when I'm working at the end of the day. I have some snacks. And I don't eat a ton of stuff when I snack. But when I do snack, I have some protein and or some fat. I don't have just carbohydrates. And then I come home and I have supper. And I have a healthy supper. So, and, you know, you and I do, we don't, our go-to is never pizza, pasta. We don't do that. Feel like cooking is salad.
Right.
And that's
how
that's,
did you like that salad last
It was really good. Yeah,
wasn't that good?
It's always really good.
Mm.
I mean, we've been eating the same salad for years. I wonder if that's a good thing. I mean, we change up what's in the salad.
We change up what's in it, but we're, you know, I change it around sometimes.
Right.
There were papaya chunks in there last night.
Oh, that was what that was?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know it was
Isn't that
papaya.
Nice?
Yeah. I
nice
thought it was mangoes. Okay.
Well, I was going to get
fine mangoes,
but I got papayas this time.
That's fine.
So
we're good. So anyway, so what happened on The Biggest Loser? Why are all these people gaining all this weight back? Well, what's going on is they're losing weight in a way that's really unnatural. They're not changing their lifestyle. On the one hand, when you have somebody who's morbidly obese, one of the things about The Biggest Loser is it does teach you that you can take someone who's morbidly obese and get them to not be morbidly obese anymore. You can bring them
right
down to a normal weight. The problem is, at what cost? Because that person who's morbidly obese, they're on the campus. They put them on this this, you know, Biggest Loser campus, where they're taken out of their lives. They're taken away from all their stressors. They're taken away from all their responsibilities. And their responsibility is to eat, sleep, rest, and exercise. And their job is to exercise. And they spend 8 to 9 hours a day working out and getting screamed at. And they have personal trainers standing over them, motivating them. So they're working out as hard as they possibly can all the time. You know,
mm-hmm.
I guess with breaks of rest, they have doctors on staff who are taking care of them when they get injured. But there's a few things that happen that are problematic there. They're going from 0 to 60 very rapidly. People do get injured. People do get sick.
Oh, they do.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, how long? I'm trying to find out how long they're actually on that. Is it like a 3-month program or is it a 4-month program?
How much time do they spend on the
ranch? How much time do you actually spend doing this? This ridiculous weight of loss, loss of weight, excuse me, loss
that's a
of
good
weight.
Question. It's something like 3 to 6 months, but I'm not entirely certain.
Yeah.
So it's so one of the things that they're finding is that you have people who win The Biggest Loser, and then when you come to see them a few years later, some of them have gained most or all of their weight. So they actually did a study. So there was a study of contestants from The Biggest Loser who found their metabolism slowed during and after the competition, making it difficult to maintain weight loss. So 13 of the 14 contestants studied regained weight in the 6 years after the competition. 4 contestants are heavier now than before the competition.
Oh, that's a crime.
Right. And there was one contestant that was studied in this particular study. It was in the journal Obesity. There was only one contestant. Her name is Erin Egbert. She is the only one who weighs less today than 6 years ago. All of the rest of them have regained weight.
Oh.
And some of them have regained, you know, over 100 pounds. And so one of the things that happens is because they lose the weight so fast and they change what they're doing so quickly is their metabolism goes way down because the body is struggling to maintain the fat. That they had a normal metabolic rate when they started. And the reason that that happened was because they tried to lose weight so rapidly. So the thing is, if you go on a drastic diet, a diet that drastically changes what you're doing and that makes it so that you can't eat forbidden foods, and so that you, you know, you drastically lower your calorie intake. That's that your diet, your body's going to fight against that. You're going to lower your metabolism. So, and one of the things that you see on The Biggest Loser is that you, it's a head case thing because they compete against each other.
Oh,
men
ridiculous.
Are competing against women, which makes no sense because women, as we said, women's leptin drops far faster than men's leptin.
Right.
And so the women are going to be hungrier. It's going to be a lot harder for them to lose weight. And their and women's metabolism slows more than the men's. So the men tend to lose more weight.
And the men are going to have a more muscular body. So the muscle is going to be
It's going to
burn more fat.
Right.
So, you know, there's going to be that going on. I mean, it's just it's a ridiculous
Having said that, the men still regain the weight.
Yes, they did. As a matter of fact, one of them regained back a fair amount of weight, like within 2 weeks, gained back like 25 pounds. It was all water weight because he had lost all his water weight. And he started drinking water again on a regular basis and his weight came back.
Right.
It's
right, because they water, because one of the things is they're, because they're measuring what's going on the scale.
Right.
They do things like water starve themselves before weigh-ins.
Yeah, this goes back to the high school wrestling team.
Yeah.
You know, and being able to weigh in at a certain weight so that you could wrestle that evening, you know, in the match. It's like, it's crazy.
It's right, just,
it's
really bad
really
for your body.
Not good for your body at all.
Right. So one of the things that happens is your setup, on the one hand, your setup and you're sequestered, because that's one of the things that I say sometimes, that because I have people in my practice who struggle with fat loss endlessly, and it's because the way they're set up in their lives, there are changes that are very hard for them to make. And it's unusual, I have to say. I mean, I don't want to say I'm not a success, but the reality is it's very hard for people to lose weight and maintain it. And when you're running any kind of a practice, you know, it's hard for you to have a practice where people successfully lose weight and keep it off. I think that even if you run a fat loss company, it's very hard. That's why you have Weight Watchers has lifetime members.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I also think that Weight Watchers puts unrealistic goals on people, but that's another story for another time.
Well, they might. I mean, although Weight Watchers has some aspects to it that work. And on the idea that it is a lifetime membership, you're getting lifetime support and that you're having to watch what you're doing for your life. Because if you do have a problem with obesity, you have to be vigilant. You can't just let it go. It's not something you can never think about. On the other hand, we do want to help you to get in a state where maintaining a weight that's healthy for you is effortless. And that you don't have to be thinking about it all the time because it just becomes part of what you do. It becomes part of a practice. So what you do, what they're doing at The Biggest Loser is they're taking them, so they're sequestering them from their normal lives, and they're putting them in a situation where they're taking away all the excuses. They're taking away all the things, all the reasons. Well, I have to commute. I have kids and I have a commute and I have a stressful job and I'm taking care of mom and grandma. I'm doing all these things. They take them out of that life and they put them in a place where none of that's going on. And all
right.
They can do is eat healthfully and exercise. And all their trigger foods are taken away from them. They're contraband and you don't eat them. You can only eat healthy food. And so they successfully lose a lot of weight. And they're made to exercise all the time. The problem is when you lose weight, that I don't know if they talk about if there was anything about, because when you lose weight very rapidly, you're at a risk of, you're losing fat. I mean, you're burning fat. Some of the fat that's going to come out, you're going to excrete some of the components of that fat in your bile, and people get gallstones. So I don't know how often that happens.
I wonder.
Right, because you don't hear about that. But when you lose weight very rapidly, you can get gallstones.
Wow.
Because you're just changing your fat metabolism so rapidly.
Well,
and so...
Isn't the healthy way of losing weight somewhere around 1 to 2 pounds a week?
Right. Yeah.
So if you're 1 to 2 pounds a
or
week,
less.
And the Biggest Loser people are dropping 10, 15
in
pounds
a week. In the
first
couple of weeks, yes. They're
it's
losing in the 20s.
It's terrible what they're doing to these people.
Yeah.
They're really like, they're making money off of it. And it's just really, they're exploiting them.
Yeah. So really... because what you see is, I mean, you think they did something nice for these people by helping them to lose all this weight, but if the upshot, now it's up to you, of course, when you come off The Biggest Loser, to change your lifestyle and make it so that now you have a lifestyle and a diet that maintains that fat loss. But one of the things that happens is because they lost the fat so rapidly, they did metabolic damage to themselves. They reduced their metabolism. They had, when they start on the ranch, they have normal metabolisms for their size. And when they leave the ranch, it's much lower than it should be for their size.
So here you go, Doc. Here's the question. So if you do this damage to yourself, as you're saying, is it irreparable? Or
that's a really good question. I'm not sure if it's irreparable. I think it's probably reparable to an extent. So that is not what I'm clear of. I know that one of the things that Jade and Keone Tita do is they help you take care of metabolic damage. And the way that they do that is they help you change what you do. They have you focus on resistance training, and they have you focus on rest. They have you do rest-based training.
Rest is good.
Yeah. And so they and so this business where they have you exercising for 8-9 hours a day, you don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that anyway. You do short burst activities. Now you have other programs where they have you exercising for 15 minutes a few days a week, and that's all you do. I don't know if that's useful either, because you have to look at what were humans meant to do. And that's where you have to look at what did people do before there were gyms, before they were sitting in front of your computer, before there were kids in a commute. What did people do in times when we were in the jungle or whatever? What we did is we foraged. We walked around and we foraged. We hunted. We gathered. Sometimes we killed an animal. We went from place to place and we did whatever work needed to be done. Even before there was technology, when you worked on the farm, you didn't like exercise for exercise's sake. You just did the work that needed to be done that day. And you didn't worry too much about how much you weighed. You ate when you were hungry. You ate when it was lunchtime and you were hungry by then. And then you moved all day and it didn't matter. And there was no need to do, spin class because you were working on the farm. And now you have a situation where people aren't moving regularly. And the thing is, when you move, the other thing is you're not supposed to move. I actually had to have a talk with some clients of mine who are landscapers. And one of them was complaining about fat loss and the other was complaining about both of them were complaining about being exhausted. And I said to them, well, you guys aren't resting enough. And they're like, well, we take breaks during the day. I'm like, yeah, but you know what? You need to model it after rest-based training. That instead of taking your, going to work at, say, 9 in the morning or 7 in the morning, whatever, and getting a break at 9, taking a drink break, and working again till noon and having a lunch break, that's not enough rest. I'm talking about you have tasks. All right. So your task is you're gonna dig this pile of dirt up. You're gonna dig up the pile of dirt, and you make a mound. And that digging that pile of dirt up maybe takes 15 to 20 minutes. You're done with that. You sit down and you rest, or you do very slow walking. When you've come back and you feel completely rested, then you scoop the dirt into the wheelbarrow. Depending on how long that takes, you do blocks of workout. As a landscaper, where you take rests every 15 to 20 minutes or less if it's a very strenuous activity, and you literally do the same thing we tell people to do when they're doing sprints. You know, what did I do yesterday? I did 30-second sprints with 2 minutes of rest in between. Mm-hmm. And by rest, I took all the resistance off until my heart rate came all the way down. They put a little bit of resistance on again, and then I backed it all the way off for 15 seconds before I went back into the next one. That's what I'm talking about. So if you're a laborer, please heed my words. This might be really helpful to you. And if you do this, you will enjoy your workday more because you get to look forward to rest several times an hour. And you'll be more efficient. Every task you do, you'll do better because you'll be more efficient at it. And this might be a good model for me when I'm doing my charts at the end of the day. 15 minutes, take a break. 15 minutes, take a break.
And get up and walk around.
Right.
That's the other thing.
You're sitting at a desk.
One of the things it says here, I've got a list of 10 ways to speed up your metabolism just one day. And, there's just a number of different simple things. One is if the phone rings, get up and walk around with the phone.
Right.
Don't sit at a desk when the phone's ringing. Don't sit down with it. Get up and walk. Walk while you're talking on the phone.
Right.
Just move. That's all. Yes. Simple. Really simple. And I always love to use this example, too. And, you know, you talk about people working and how we're very different from what we used to be. I'm always pointing towards the delivery man. The UPS driver, the FedEx driver, the DHL driver. There's not one of them that's overweight.
Because they do interval training.
Because they're constantly doing interval training. That's what they're doing. They're sitting and resting in between stops.
Right.
But then when they get out, they're hustling over to drop a package off. They've got weight in their hands.
Yep.
So they go and they drop the package off. They bend over. They get back up. They get back into the truck. And then they drive again. They're never really sitting still for a very long period of time.
And then they make you sign a thing. And then after you sign it, they say, what's your last name?
Yeah, right. Well, they do that, too. I don't think that has anything to do with weight loss.
But that's a thing they do.
Or their physique. But
and when I sign the thing, I usually put a flower.
That's why when there was a sitcom that came on TV. What was it? King of Queens
King of
or
Queens.
Something. Yeah, King of Queens. And it shows this gentleman who is working for the Brown Company.
Yes.
You know, the brown suit company.
Right.
And he's large. And I'm looking and I'm going, this is not realistic.
It's
not realistic, folks.
Right.
You're kind of missing the whole point. The guy who used to deliver to my Ray, if Ray is out there still, I don't know where Ray might be. He used to live in Canterbury. Anyway, if Ray is out there, he was amazing. And I don't think he retired until he was probably close to 60 or so.
Yeah.
He had worked for UPS his whole life. Man was skinny as a rail and real fit. And
right.
Carrying big, heavy boxes and small man, but just real, real fit.
Yeah.
Because he's moving. That's
it.
That's what it's all about. It's all about moving, moving, moving. So get outside is another one of those things you do to increase your metabolism. Adding protein is another thing you do to increase your metabolism. Nibble on chocolate is one of the things.
Yes.
On the list.
Eat there a little bit of
I know
chocolate
you like
every
that
day.
One. Yeah.
Oh, sure. I mean, don't eat a ton of, you know, you don't want to eat whole. Well, cocoa, raw organic cocoa. If it's unsweetened, you can have as much as you want. That because it's got negligible calories and it's got a lot of things in it that are going to help your metabolism and helps your cravings and it has flavanols that help to regulate your blood sugar. So and it's really good for cardiovascular health. In terms of a chocolate bar, if it has a very high cocoa content, then the problem with that cocoa is not the chocolate, it's the sugar.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
And that's why it's the sugar that's in the chocolate that you want to limit. So if you have a 2 ounces a day of that. So when we say 2 ounces of cocoa a day, we want you to have 2 ounces of 70%+ chocolate. If you're eating a chocolate bar, it should be 70%+ cocoa. It should be non-alkalized.
The good stuff.
Non-dutched. And if it's got sugar in it, no more than 2 ounces. If it doesn't have sugar in it, you can have at it. All right? So you can have a bowl of berries and sprinkle cocoa nibs on it or
that's
cocoa
why
powder.
Those cocoa nibs are so good because they're really very satisfying too. Really interesting.
Well, we could put the cocoa nibs in the salad.
If we wanted to put anything more healthy in the salad?
Well, it's another variety of salad. So, for example, here we'll just run down our go-to salad again. I think it bears repeating 1,000 times because it's really good. You find yourself mixed greens of some kind. If you prefer some kind of dark lettuce, fine. But we're going to tell you what we do. We get mixed greens.
Clarify mixed greens here. There's no light lettuce in there. There's no iceberg.
No iceberg. That
no
is
iceberg.
Correct.
Say no to iceberg.
We get it from our local grower. Mm-hmm. So you can go to your local farmer's market. In fact, the Outdoor Stores Farmer's Market is starting this weekend.
Saturday.
It is starting on
Yay.
Saturday at 3 o'clock.
That's a big deal.
And I will be looking down on it from here, flapping my wings very hard.
Yeah, you're flapping your wings over the top, right?
Yes.
You're flying away. But I'll be there.
Yeah, that's right. You can go to the farmer's market. And so that's a great place to get produce, farmer's markets in general, and CSAs, your local community-supported agriculture, buying a share in one of those. And sometimes the CSAs have overstock, and they'll tell you, hey, we're having a sale. We have some overstock, so it's a good idea to go there. I know Shenda High Farms does that regularly.
Right.
Even though they have a CSA, they'll have Produce Thursdays. So if you watch for Produce Thursdays, if you want to get on their mailing list, they'll mail you when they're having Produce Thursdays, and you can go to the farm, and they'll have produce for you that even if you're not part of the CSA. So that's kind of cool, too.
And the greens are great right
greens
now.
Are great.
It's been a big year. It's been a
right.
real big year.
So, and you, you just go to the Willimantic Food Co-op. They carry local growers greens.
Yeah, they sure
do. So we're very happy about that. So that's what we usually get. We get those. And if you don't go to the farmer's market and you don't go to the Willy Co-op and you do go to the supermarket or you go to Big Box, fine. You can get yourself organic greens. We get organic mixed greens. I mean, we resort to that sometimes in the winter.
In the winter, we have to. Yeah, right.
Right. Yeah. So you get those. You can just tear them up and throw them in a bowl, or you can chop them like Ron does. That it's up to you. We throw in carrots. Carrots, again, can be chopped or grated if you want. We throw in radishes, again, grated or chopped. Mm-hmm. Cucumbers we put in.
Right.
Those are our bases. And
carrots. Did you say carrots?
Yes, and tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Of course, the tomatoes are going to be better when they're in season, but we do try. We get organic tomatoes from other places when they're not in season. And that's our base.
Right. And then there's sometimes we throw in some Jerusalem artichokes.
Yes.
And sometimes we throw in raw beets.
Yes.
We'll just grate them.
Right.
Just grate them right in there.
Right.
And
then lately, Ron has been putting in small amounts of various dried fruit. And so his dried fruit this week, he picked up some papaya. So he chopped up little bits of papaya. So we're not talking like huge papaya sticks, because if you get into eating several raw papaya, you know, dried papaya sticks, which have some sugar added to them.
A bunch of calories there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's talking about chopping up, you know, a half a stick and putting it.
And I just chop it in little bits,
right,
like raisin-sized bits is what you're looking for.
And he throws it in.
And then I throw them in the salad, and you mix them in, and it's really pleasant. It's
right.
A really nice thing.
So it makes it a little bit sweet.
Also,
if you want to do...
apples are good in there,
too. He does apples, too, mm-hmm, sometimes. And then the other thing is, so here's getting back to the cocoa nibs.
Mm-hmm.
You can make that same salad. And if you want, you want to make the salad a little bit on the sweet side. So you might throw in some dried cranberries.
Mm-hmm.
You might throw. We love to throw in goji berries sometimes.
Goji berries, yeah.
So dried cranberries, goji berries. Or you can use fresh raspberries. Those are really good too in salad, believe it or not.
Right.
You can use any or all of those. And the fresh raspberries, the thing with raspberries very low in calories. They mm-hmm, don't add much in calories, and they add a lot of, they have, remember raspberry ketone?
Mm.
Anyway, they have some of those in there, and they're very low calorie. They're very high in flavonoids. You know, they're very good for you, and raspberries pair amazingly well with chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
So you throw your raspberries and or your goji berries and or your cranberries on top, and then you get cocoa nibs and you sprinkle them on top. And then your oil, we do oil and vinegar. You do your good olive oil. And I would probably want to do a sweeter vinegar on that. So I'd probably use some balsamic vinegar. I have been enjoying using fire cider on my salad, although I probably wouldn't do the fire cider for this salad. I'd use the balsamic. So you drizzle on some olive oil and balsamic vinegar, and off you go. And you might
salt and pepper
if you want, might not want to because this is a sweet salad.
I still like my salt.
You could
and pepper.
Do your salt and pepper, but you mm-hmm, don't have to.
Because
the salad is sweet, and that's our salad. We have a big salad, and then we're gonna have a piece of protein with that.
And when we're talking about this, we're talking about if you were to look at on a plate, let's say you put it on a large plate. We put our salads in a bowl, but if you were put on a large plate, 3/4 of your plate is filled with salad, and a little tiny quarter is filled with your protein.
Yeah,
and that's a great way to measure it out. It's kind of
right. So our protein and the protein protein is going to be based on your needs. If you're working out a lot, you're going to need to eat more protein, and your body will tell you, but you're going to need to eat more protein if you're working out a lot. And we eat protein through the day.
Yes.
Like we'll have some lunch meat, and you have eggs in the morning usually.
I have it for breakfast also.
Yeah. I have a protein bar here, which I have sometimes. I have yogurt. We eat nuts and seeds. So we don't need to have a big slab of something in the evening because we're eating protein throughout the day. And
mm-hmm,
sometimes I have a protein shake, and I either, depending on the day, I will have yellow pea protein or I will have whey protein. So depending. At the end of the day, I usually have a piece of fish. Ron will have beef. I don't do as well with beef, so I don't eat beef regularly. I eat beef in a burger, a grass-fed burger once a week, and he will eat beef more frequently through the week, and we get grass-fed beef.
I really like it.
Yeah. And
especially the grass-fed. It's way tastier.
It well.
Yeah. It's
so
really,
I'm not a
really
person
good.
Who digests beef well, so I do much better with fish, and I do much better with poultry, and we'll have chicken, and we keep organic sausage around,
mm-hmm,
and we keep just good old chicken breast. We use that too. Once in a while, we have turkey. So That we have that more than we ever. He has red meat more often than I do.
I do.
And I don't. I just don't do as well with it. And that helps us keep our girlish figures, pretty much.
There you go.
Yeah. And we don't. This is the other thing. So one of the things that's hard about the Biggest Loser is they're not changing their lifestyle. So there are other programs. That's why I have to keep checking in with my patients. What do you want to do? Do you want to do a program where you're told exactly what to eat? Or do you want to make small changes gradually? And depending on who the person is, they may say one or the other. So the thing is, there are some programs out there that you can follow, but most people are frequently not motivated to stay with a program. They get off track and they find it very difficult to get back on track. But there are some great programs out there that will be helpful. Like there's this Whole30 plan. The Whole30 plan is where you eat whole foods for a whole month. And so you're not going to be eating any grains, no grains or dairy. And all whole foods, all fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, clean animal protein. I think you get to do small amounts of caffeine, but no sugar, no refined sugar. And people do very well. Their inflammation improves and they lose weight and they do very well. And I had a friend who had a severe back problem who went on Whole30, and after a month, his back pain was completely gone. And then he went back to eating the way he ordinarily ate and his back pain came back. I'm like, well, what does that tell you?
There you go.
You know, that one of the things they tell you with Whole30 is add your favorite foods back a little at a time and see if they bother you. But I'm just wondering if people just go, oh, they're waiting for that last day so they can eat a cookie the next day.
So they can fall off the wagon. Yeah.
So this is the thing, though. Mm. People tend not to stay with strict problems. There's another one that's out there, Ideal Protein. So I see people going on Ideal Protein, and Ideal Protein is very interesting. They have people that match their eating with their exercise. So if they're not losing weight, they'll have them cut their carbs way, way down and stop exercising. And so the thing is, when you do that, you're going to slow the metabolism way down. It doesn't make sense. In order to have a metabolism, you have to eat. You don't have to eat all the time, but this is the other side of it. You don't have to eat all the time, but you do have to eat. And you have to eat based on what our bodies were designed to do. Our bodies were designed for a feast or famine. Our bodies were designed to be able to take care of us for a while there's no food, which is why some people can train their bodies to do intermittent fasting. If you're a person who tends to keep weight on easily, intermittent fasting might be helpful for you, because when you intermittently fast, you give your body a break. You give your body some time where the insulin isn't high so that you're not storing fat, and you let your digestive system get a break. It gets some time to heal. So if you're eating all the time, your digestive system never gets a break and it can't do repair. It's kind of like when the highway always has traffic on it. You can never fix the highway. Well, if you stop sending food down, the digestive system can do some repair. Now, this doesn't mean fast to the point where you're dying and starving. It means that maybe you eat every day within an 8-hour window. Or at the very least, you can just skip breakfast. That's another way of intermittently fasting. Some people do better because they're just having one less meal a day. So they wind up eating less food and they get that break from eating. Some people choose to do a very low calorie day twice a week. So perhaps on Monday and Thursday, you eat 500 to 600 calories. And really they should be 500 to 600 healthy calories. That's another way of doing it. If you're an athlete, intermittent fasting is probably not going to work that great for you, depending on what you're trying to do. If you're doing cardio activity like I do, intermittent fasting isn't going to be the most wonderful thing.
Fasting as an athlete?
Sure.
Ouch.
Well, if you're doing resistance training, it's again, like everything in the life, the human body was designed for periods of use and periods of rest. And that goes for eating, too.
Well, I guess you're giving your digestive system a rest that way.
Hell, that's what I just got through saying.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Exactly.
I was on the phone.
When you do intermittent fasting, that's what happens. You get some time for the digestive system to take a break. Now, you sit there and you say, oh, I'm starving. I have to eat all the time. And what I see you do is you come home from fitness and you sit down at your computer and I see you making your breakfast at noon.
Well, it's because I've had two breakfasts before that, because I eat breakfast before I, what some people would call breakfast, before I go up to teach class.
Oh.
And then after I get done teaching my class and after I've taken my shower and driving home, I'm usually eating in the car.
You have a bar.
I eat every couple of hours. I'm always eating.
That's because, and that's what you need to do.
So, because if I don't, I tip over.
Right, because you don't, right, because that's genetics for you.
Yeah, that's genetics.
So, some people are genetically that way. I read something about lipoprotein lipase receptors. Depending on where your lipoprotein lipase receptors are, that's genetically mediated. So, if you have a lot of lipoprotein lipase receptors on your fat cells, those are stimulated by eating, and they wake up when they are fed food. So, if you eat a lot, your lipoprotein lipase receptors are going to pull, they're going to wake up and they're going to cause you to store fat. They're going to cause metabolism of the fatty tissue. So the fatty tissue is going to take on more fat. If your lipoprotein lipase receptors are mostly distributed on your muscles, when you eat, your muscles are actually stimulated. And you're not going to tend to store fat because there's not a lot of metabolism going there. So you have to eat a lot. So you wind up eating a lot. And I'm probably somewhere in between, because I can definitely build muscle, and I probably have some lipoprotein lipase receptors on my muscle cells, but I definitely can gain weight, and I have to watch how much I eat. And I can also go for much longer periods of not eating than you can. And
yeah.
I will frequently work out in the morning. If I'm doing a short workout in the morning, I might work out on an empty stomach. So by the way, if you want to increase your metabolism, that's one way to do it, to actually work out on an empty stomach. You wouldn't do that if you were going to go do a two-hour bike ride.
No, but if you're doing an hour workout or
if
a 45-minute
workout,
and
it wasn't super hard, you might. And if you're like me, I can't eat before spin class because my body's not primed to eat yet. You can do that, but I can't.
Yeah, if I go and teach a spin class without having something in my body before I do it, then I'm ready to eat the microphone at the end.
And you're different from me, and you're different from most people, actually, because
yeah,
obviously you're different from most people, because most people in this country are obese.
It's because I'm weird.
Are not obese, but overweight. Most people in this country are overweight, so most people are not like you. Most people are more like me, and more like most of the people in the country. If you have fat stores, you can probably exercise early in the morning on an empty stomach, and that tends to rev your metabolism. So also being out in the cold. So this is what I used to try to tell people. If you want to rev up your metabolism, get exercise. Exercising at all increases your metabolism on an empty stomach in the cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, so if you do those three things, so that would be get up in the morning, go for a brisk walk, or do interval walking in the cold.
There you go.
That can help you to raise your metabolism.
Hmm.
So the big thing is, the big failing of The Biggest Loser is that they don't address from the word go. I mean, perhaps they do months out, but they are dealing with people sequestered. They are not dealing with people in an environment where they're in their lives. So they're not helping them to change their lives the way they are. Really, what would help, like if you wanted to coach somebody, what would really work is if you could hire somebody to follow you around in your actual life.
24/7.
Maybe for a couple
of
weeks.
No getting up in the middle of the night and raiding the refrigerator.
Okay, whatever. But my point was that if you had a coach that actually followed you around in your life and was able to see what's actually going on in your life and make tweaks in your actual life. Because all I can do sitting here, I'm talking to you live on the radio, and then maybe some of you are going to be listening to this on podcast. All I can do is give you general information that may or may not work for you specifically. But, what you have to do is make small changes in your life.
Right. So
the first thing to do is commit to exercise. You're not going to be able to have a healthy weight if you don't move. It's just not going to happen. So then you have to figure out what you are willing to do to move. And remember that moving doesn't have to be a specific form of exercise. There's so many different things you can do. You can join classes. You can join clubs. You can ride a bike. You can walk. You can do random bouts of exercise. You can get apps. There are apps that will plan workouts for you. There are free apps that will do that for you, where you have an app and you can also set up a schedule for yourself where you get pinged every few hours to get up and do a small burst of exercise. So for example, if you're like, well, I have kids in a commute, you know, and I have to take care of my kid and this and that and the other thing. All right, fine. What might work for you then is, well, you have to go. So you have to take that kid somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to schlep that kid to a place. All right, great. When you get to the place, put the kid into whatever activity the kid is going to be in. Spend 5 minutes doing squats. The next thing you do, all right, you're sitting at your computer and you're at a computer desk and you're working on the computer. All right, you get pinged after 10 minutes. You get up and you have some light weights and you do some upright rows, just for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And you
Doesn't
have pings
much, right?
throughout the day where you do stuff like that. And after a while, it will add up. The other thing that's really cool is, Google and also Apple both have apps that run in the background on your smartphone that will track your steps.
Mm-hmm.
And you can track your steps throughout the day and see if you can make your 10,000 steps. They track all of your activity. But I think that's when people tell me, the biggest thing people tell me is they don't have time and they don't prioritize it. That's why I'm wondering if people could do random bursts of activity spaced throughout the day. So they don't feel like, oh, I have to put on my clothes and I have to exercise and I have to carve out half an hour to do it. Sometimes people don't feel like they have a half an hour. So that's why we give you tasks that might total up to half an hour. But, you know, first thing in the morning, you're going to do 10 squats. After you eat your breakfast, you're going to do some bicycle crunches. And then, you know, when you're sitting at your computer desk every half hour, you're pinged and you have to do, you know, 10 squats or, some upright rows or some bicep curls or, you know, some compound exercise. And you do that through the day. And maybe your goal is, okay, I'm going to have 10 bouts of that through the day. And then when you're done, see, if they had a proper app that did that, it would give you a little flower. It'd give you a badge for completing it.
There you go.
And it'd be like a game. You would be doing it to get points.
Right. So, if you're really struggling with this, and, you know, I am always a big proponent of baby steps, and you're sitting at a desk, then get up, sit down 10 times.
Yeah.
Up, down, up, down.
Right.
Up, down. And then just go back to what you're doing.
And if you're not sure what exercise to do, just Google, what exercise can I do right now? And just pick, and you will get 10 hits. Pick one and just do it. And spend 30 seconds doing it, and then you're done. And then see how many you can rack up during the day. And you don't have to do it all in one shot. You do it throughout the day. And by the end of the day, you've behaved as though you were working on the farm.
There you go.
Because you're getting bursts of exercise throughout the day paired with rest.
Right.
And that's going to be a lot more effective for you. And then in terms of the eating, one of the things to do is if you're overstarching, I'm telling you, if you're eating too much modern wheat, so that one of the things they talk about is these people have horrible cravings. So one of the things they're doing is, yes, their metabolism has gone down, but they're probably not watching their food and they're eating things that they're craving. They're gaining weight that fast. So, You have to do that. So you have to address cravings. And there are things you can do about cravings. When you eat protein, fat, and fiber, and cocoa, all of those things help with cravings. Drinking water helps with cravings. So, and caffeine can also help with cravings. So you have to, now the amount of caffeine that works for you varies. Some people can't do any at all because it mm-hmm. gives them headaches and makes them sick. I have to do a small amount of caffeine. You can do a lot more than I can. And I have to space my caffeine throughout the day. And I can't do a full strength cup of coffee unless it's a very small amount.
Caffeine also boosts your metabolism.
Yes, it does. Right. And there's different ways to do caffeine. If you're not a coffee person, Sure. Cocoa has some caffeine in it. Green tea has been studied to help with weight loss. So has oolong tea. Tea in general. And tea is my go-to caffeine. And in my water bottles, I'm, now this is weird, but I'm a guayusa fan. So there's a product called, there's
guayusa?
An herb called guayusa, G-U-A-Y-U-S-A.
Okay.
There's a brand called Runa that makes it. But I like to use that herb, guayusa. It's a tea that you can get. You can make it in tea bags or you can get it in bottles. And that goes in my water bottles for heavy efforts because it gives you caffeine and it's a – and green tea is somewhat similar to this. I think guayusa is even more mellow. It gives you a sustained energy without making you wired. It's very nice. And I've been using that for a couple of years now. I enjoy it. So that's something that can help as well. So these are all, so then the other thing is in terms of eating, you have to work on listening to internal cues that in the end, that's what you want to do. You have to, if you eat too little, you're going to slow your metabolism down and you're going to drop your leptin and you're going to increase your ghrelin and your leptin's going to make it so that your metabolism goes down. So you can't under eat. You can have, but the other thing to do is to when you exercise a lot, you get to eat more that day. When you don't exercise as much, you eat less that day, which once again, that's what the hunter-gatherers would have done. If they're lying around, they're not going to be as hungry. So they eat when they're hungry and they eat when you have a lot of activity. On the days that you don't exercise as much, you don't eat as much. Eat less, exercise more, in the end doesn't work. And that's what they did in The Biggest Loser. That damages your metabolism. But eat according to your exercise does work. So if you eat more when you've been getting exercise, you're going to support a healthy metabolism. And you're going to enjoy your food. The other thing is, unless you're absolutely intolerant to a food, there's something you love, eat it. I have to be really careful with modern wheat. Like if I eat a little bit of baklava, I'm going to pay for it with symptoms. So you have to make that decision. If you know that a food is going to make you sick, you may not want to eat it because then it's causing inflammation. And once you have inflammation, you get into an insulin cycle. Inflammation will make you gain weight. So if a food is making you sick, it's not a good idea to eat it. Having said that, if it's not making you acutely sick and you love it, so if you're a big pizza fan, I recommend working pizza into your diet. Don't say, I can't ever eat pizza again. If you like chocolate mousse, don't say, I can never eat chocolate mousse again. I wouldn't do that. You work it in a way and in an amount that you can enjoy it. And for me, you know, in order for me to eat a big treat like that, I have to get a lot of exercise. But I'm not going to never go to the Yukon Dairy Bar again. I'm going to eat chocolate mousse. I'm going to go to Dees One Smart Cookie and get pastries, but I'm just going to not eat. I'm not going to sit down and eat a whole pastry. And if I cut that pastry up, I get to have a little bit of it over several days. And that's something that's hard for people to do. People can't stop at just one or just a small amount. So, all right. So I guess we have to wrap it up. So that's the idea. So
we
that
can
was
wrap
our.
Wrap it up. I have a nice one for our next show here because I saw it come through on a quick text here and tell Fran to talk about diet soda.
Okay.
But that's a rant and that will take some time.
Yes. All right. So you're listening to WHUS 91.7 FM. And you're also listening to 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, and we will be back live in 2 weeks with more Radio Naturopath here on WHUS 91.7 FM.